Good morning, welcome to Portland. Well, I will not keep with these formalities because we can go directly to the scientific part. But before that, we need the experts here to tell us a few things about water resources before we will start. So just one small word in Portuguese. Há muita gente na sala presente. Falem inglês, português, francês, alemão, italiano, etc. Para manter uma língua única que toda a gente perceba, vamos manter o inglês e quando não se entender, traduzam entre vocês, mas temos que manter o inglês comigo. Coming back. I will just introduce Tony Allen, Professor Tony Allen and Alan Nico very quickly, and then they will give us the keynote speech, and then me and Susanna will be introducing you to this conference. I mean, to understand what are we going to talk about in the next 2 days, why the title of this conference, and which are the goals at the end of this conference. So I will start by introducing Professor Tony Allen, Professor at King's College of London and the School of Oriental and African Studies, also director of the London Water Research Group, and this year awarded with the Stockholm Water Prize, that is the equivalent for someone that doesn't know the Nobel Prize of Water. So, Antony will give us a presentation about water resource management in Africa, raising some questions, important questions. Alan Nico, that is the director of the Water Program of the Overseas Development Institute in London, that's based entirely in the UK, and also director of the Ripple Project Research. Inspired policy and learning practice. and Susanna Nett was already introduced, so one of the members of the scientific commission. There were four people that were not mentioned in the beginning. So, Professor Paulo, Professor Paulo, and Professor Nadir, we know about this. So, Tony, up to you to start. Just don't hold.
Yes, professor of fellow water scientists and fellow researchers in Africa. Can you hear me properly at the back? It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me to this beautiful city. It's worked perfectly so far, and it is a feast for the eyes, and the weather is absolutely magnificent. Thank you. What I want to talk about is water in Africa, because that's the theme of the meeting. But I want to give you a very general perspective, a bit idiosyncratic in that my journey in science has been from the hydrological end of water science, partly as a result of finding that the numbers that I was finding in water didn't seem to be of any importance to the community managing water. I began to realize that politics was very, very significant. At various points in my life, 15 years ago and more recently, as people on my left and right, I've been reinforced in my conviction that politics is where it happens. Discourses on water are subordinate, and in science generally, are subordinate to discourses in politics. Think climate change. Climate change has got quite a lot of good numbers, but they don't count if they're not considered to be useful in the political arena. So that's the theme, that if we're going to understand Africa also in its water problems, we're going to need to understand the politics. And I sense that there are some good people here that will help us do that during the 2 days. So a political governance and the management challenge. Just to give you a sense of Africa with respect to water in terms of the rest of the world, you can see that Africa, although it doesn't seem so on this map projection, Africa is as big as Asia, but it doesn't look as big on this particular projection, but it is as big, as I said, as Asia, which is the biggest possible. It has the characteristic of having the biggest desert as well, that's quite clear. And Africa has a northern part, and the part which this group, I think, scientists and other people are interested in, of course, in Africa south of the Sahara. North of the Sahara, and there are some green bits, but green as in Egypt is only there because of the water that in fact originates in the main part of Africa and the central part of Africa and Ethiopia. So about a quarter of the population of Africa live in North Africa, and half of that population is imported from the Africa south of the Sahara. So the natural sources of the south of the Sahara are important. They're often exported, as I say, to the north, and we need to be aware of that. Relative populations of Africa and the rest of the world are relevant. There are about 600 or more people living in Africa. There are about 400 in Europe, 400 million in Europe, about 500 in North America, about 700 or more than that in South America. So the population of Africa is significant in relation to those two, but of course it's very small compared with the population of China and India. China itself is 1.3 billion, India itself is 1.7 billion. So we have a continent which is very large, at least 40% is arid or semi-arid, which means that it's not rich in water resources, but it doesn't have a huge population, although as I will show in a moment, its population is rising. So we are looking at a continent which has water resources, it has more than enough water resources to cope with the present population, and probably, I would judge, with double the population. But a lot of things need to be done in order to make the case, make the fact there is enough water. And it is the way that it's managed. The way it's managed is more related to politics than to anything else. And even that was the population related to politics. So we're going to look at a few issues, endowments. I've talked already about endowments on the water resource side, indicating that there is sufficient water that isn't deeply developed yet. Either the green water, that's the water in the soil, or the blue water, that's the water in the surface under the ground, in the ground in the atmosphere. Now I'm going to look at just a few issues to do with demographics, which is going to be a challenge. Infrastructure, and governance, and some outcomes of the present situation in Africa. So just to remind us, Africa, even the north is extremely, has extremely scarce water, and the south isn't very, very rich in water, although we do see in South Africa itself that if you have a reasonably evolved or well-evolved political economy in many ways, you can, in fact, cope with the water scarcity. So, the demographics. Ethiopia is perhaps an extreme. This is the population pyramid for Ethiopia in 3 days between 2000 and 2025 and 2050. And you can see how this is a population characteristic of a poorly developed, poorly evolved political economy. And the frightening numbers are that the population now is about 70 million and it could easily double. So that's not a good Alan here, who's living in country and has for some years now, Alice is going to be informed about this and whether in the future it will be as this projection suggests. You can see that the levelling off is going to happen, but it's going to take a very long time. It will not happen until the late 20th century in the case of Ethiopia. And if you compare those population pyramids with, let's say, China and India, you can see what a dramatically different position there is. If you say, well, do these reflect politics? Profoundly, yes. Which political economy could take 300 million people out of the demographic equation? Well, that's what China has done, and you can see the consequences for the shape of that left-hand those pyramids. In fact, they're no longer pyramids. And you can see how the population of China is going to level off quite easily by the middle of the 20th century. And goodness, for the rest of the world, which hasn't not, it would be going to about 2.5 billion. Not only saving 300 billion, but perhaps a whole billion people are not going to be there because of the extraordinary political management of society in that country. So I'm just trying to draw attention to politics and absolutely determined. You can see how in India the position is different. They don't have an authoritarian government, they have a version of democracy. And you can see this is a much gentler, a much more savage social process. However, the people on the left are meat eaters, or would be meat eaters. People on the right in India are vegetarians, and vegetarians use half the water for meat eaters. So there is invisible processes. Demographic trends, you can see how two countries, Ethiopia and Uganda, are projected here to expand, and the Democratic Republic of Congo are expected to expand to double. Egypt is not going to, we probably don't have their love, whereas Ethiopia and Uganda, if they continue these trends, will increase dramatically. And since the need for water is obviously very closely related to the reason I'm talking about it is for that reason. if the colonies could be more diverse, more highly developed, they will have options which poorer colonies do not have. One of the things that happens quite quickly if you have a boom into a more industrialized type of political colony is a dramatic fall in the population. There's no sign of that happening in most of the countries south of the Sahara. There's a bit of a sign of that happening in Egypt. So, interesting. Again, just to give a perspective on where the world's water investment or investment of water management has taken place, not just now, but of course in thousands of years in the big population centers of the world, South Asia and East Asia, you can see that the extent of irrigated farming in South Asia and East Asia is very intense and comprehensive, whereas in Africa, it's where it's really deep. The only area that is highly irrigated, in fact, totally irrigated, of course, is Egypt, but the area is just about 2 million hectares. So it's not about 3 to 3, which compared to the huge hundreds of millions of hectares in the rest of the world is entirely. Some suggest in the World Bank that the amount of water storage put in place, that's dams or hydrographic dams or control of the water for irrigation, only 6% of the potential has been put in place in Africa. At this point in history, after a period when the world got into a frenzy, at least the world, we in the north, it got into a frenzy about having too many dams, because in fact there were far too many in the United States, and they are starting to dismantle some, and in Europe we've thoroughly dammed our rivers, and we're deeply aware of this, both in terms of with respect to maybe in Spain, we've got a good argument that there are too many dams in Spain. We have decided, the civil movement people, the NGOs, and even the large number of the scientists, have put in place the idea that we've got enough dams and we should, in fact, be more careful with the environment, and we should be putting more water back into the environment rather than taking it out. But that is not the case in Africa, and the World Bank, which is an agency which tries to look after the poor countries in the world, have now launched into a new phase of suggesting that we're back. John Briscoe, a couple of years ago, February, said we're back, indicating that there was going to be a period when the World Bank was going to be investing in building infrastructure again. And Africa is the main potential focus of that. So let's just look quickly at government to government. If you come to the session on agriculture, talking more about this, but can I just introduce an idea which might help us a lot in understanding the difference between government and governance? I've been at a whole meeting at which people have talked about governance and no one's been talking about the same thing. Unless I love this definition, which many of the scientists in the room might want to challenge. I'm a multidisciplinarian, and it's incredible that I should be here since this institute is what it's going to be. thorough disciplinary scope. And I talk as reasonable as mentioned about political or the politics of political economy, but I refer to the experts. But no one has come up for me with these definitions, and this is my definition. So this is governance, in that we have three entities in the liberal political economy. We've got the government, we've got the private sector, the parliament, and we've got the NGOs. And that's governance in the neoliberal political economy. There aren't many neoliberal political economies in the world. But just to indicate the difference between the Portuguese neoliberal democratic regime, the government, private sector, the civil movements all interacting in a civilized and proper way. We have a common southern mode, which perhaps is an attention in terms of the sectorization, but you can see that the common southern mode is the government is dominant, the private sector is not terribly well organized, and the civil movements are very small. It could be in the background of the civil war going on as well, so that would mean that there should be perhaps another sector segment in that particular. But in an authoritarian regime, you can have the government absolutely dominant in the case of any of the factors. So Africa is much more like the worlds on the right than on the left. And whether you would prefer in Africa to have an efficient socialist, communist inspired regime putting in place gradually in the private sector and the economies, or be a liberal so the outcomes for Africa is in governance, we want democratic infrastructure, levels of government and governance, the governance being a key issue, is that if this map, which if you analyze on the FDA website, this is the, I think the last element of it, but all the others show that in decades ago, and from 1906 and 1950 through to now, there were lots of areas covered. Orange and red then, but now the only left in the world is Africa, so the world is making progress and Africa needs to catch up. So, but at the same time, Africa does have some of the most advanced infrastructure, water management and regulation in the world, in that South Africa has got the best water law, the most advanced, the most complex, the most interesting water law in the world, so there is leading the way in many things. So I'll just cut that short. So to conclude that poverty determines water poverty, so if there's water poverty in Africa, it's because the colonies have not yet put their resources together and their politics together effectively, and water poverty does not determine poverty, it's super poor. So adaptive capacity is the main issue. So a politician's prayer, a very good South African Prime Minister, who was the first Prime Minister from 1994 through to 2000 in South Africa, and he said some water energy will forever, and that's a bit of a cop-out, but some means perhaps not enough. So Africa's prayer would be enough water for everyone and for the environment forever. Thank you.